the heart of flyover country, this is Spin Sold Separately.
See, I told you we'd get back on schedule after the holidays. Let it never be said that I am not a man of my word. Welcome back to Spin Sold Separately, everybody. I am JD. Thank you so much for joining me today, and boy, do we have a treat for you. Today, we had our first sit-down conversation with a great friend of mine. We are trying to remain anonymous on this show for now. We don't know what the internet crazies are capable of. I'm sure all our names and all everything will come out sooner or later, but right now we're sticking with initials. I sat down with a good friend of mine, SS, who has an absolutely fascinating life story. I wanted to talk to him for several reasons, but when I released the New Year's episode, he reached out to me very shortly after that and said, hey, I've got a couple suggestions on the fitness front. And I already knew I wanted to talk to him about specifically about fitness and faith. And when he reached out to me about that, it kind of accelerated the timeline here. I said, hey, can you come in and let's have a discussion about this stuff and let's do it for the podcast. And he agreed, couldn't have been more accommodating about it. And we sat down and had that conversation today. I hope you enjoy it. I will say that there is a volume issue with my two microphones. They are not jiving. The one that I use picks up sound just fine. The one that he was using, I've told you before, I am no tech expert. I am certainly no audio expert, and I did my best to try to find a way to turn his up. I could not figure it out. I did some online searching. I just couldn't find it. You would be best served to take this episode in a quiet place with your AirPods or some noise-canceling headphones. If you usually take this show in your vehicle, you're probably not going to be able to hear it, so I suggest you put this off until such time that you have a quiet space to take it in. You're going to hear all about his fascinating background, his incredibly strong and persevering faith, and you're even going to hear a little bit about his participation in not one, but two different national competitive events. I think you're going to love it. Here he is, SS. SS, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're sticking with anonymity on this show for the time being, only because I don't have to inform anybody that online people are crazy, and at least at this point, the more anonymity we have, the better. This is a friend of mine that I've known for, got to be going on two decades now, and he's got a fascinating backstory, and there's just a few things about him and his life and his existence I already wanted to talk about. And then, shortly after posting that New Year's episode where I listed off the things that I need to get better at, SS reached out to me and said, hey, I've got a couple things on the health / getting in better shape front that have worked for me, if you'd be interested in hearing that. And I said, well, I already want to bring him on and talk to him about faith, because faith has been a very strong part SS's existence to this point, and that was something I wanted to talk about already. And then he's got these fitness ideas. I said, well, you know what, let's just get this done. Let's set up a time here before I have to get back to reality and get back to work, which sadly is tomorrow. And let's sit down and talk about a couple of these things. And he was gracious enough to agree. So here he is. Like I said, we've known each other for 20 some years now. Loyal listener of this show. He's been supportive of this little project of mine right out of the gate. And like I said, I already wanted to talk to him about faith. Then the fitness thing came up. I said, well, that's two of my eight resolutions already. So let's sit down and do this. So I've always admired your physical physique. For those of you that don't know him, did you mind if I ask you how old you are?
67.
God, that's even more than I thought. And no offense, but for those of you that don't know him, okay, 67 years old, he is as fit, if not more so, I mean, even in just physical appearance, forget his strength, than people half his age. 67 years old, he wears a sleeveless tank top. Now, we all know people in our lives for which that look does not work. It works for him, and it always has. He's sitting across from me right now wearing a sleeveless tank top, and it works because he's built like somebody in their 20s or 30s. I play golf with him. It blows my mind. I play golf with my 20 and 30-something nephews. This guy outdrives them by 25 or 30 yards. He's one of the best dart players in the state, if I'm not mistaken, if not the country. Do you play softball? You play church league?
I used to play, yeah, for Nick's Burgers downtown.
Did you hit that ball 350 feet, too?
305, 310 once in a while, yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all. He used to rock the Hulk Hogan Fu Manchu. He's got the full goatee now, but he makes either one look good. And you add in the faith factor and the fact that he's always been such a supporter of this little deal of mine here right from the start, and I just knew this was somebody I wanted to talk to. And here he is, my very first sit-down discussion on this podcast, and I couldn't be more excited. Like I said, we worked together for about 20 years. He retired a few years ago, so let's start there. How's retirement going?
It's nice not having to get up in the morning and freezing temperatures to go into work, and it's been really well. It's been good.
Yeah. Apologies, I'm having some audio issues here. My two mics are not behaving the same, so I'm trying to talk a little bit further back, and I'm already not doing a good job at that. I'm trying to talk a little softer. My friend here is trying to talk a little louder because these two mics are just not jiving, but hopefully I can iron that out in the playback here when we get this posted. But so not getting up in the morning, that's pretty nice. Even my week and a half I've had off here, I've already gotten used to that, and that's going to be the first difficulty getting back to it. But are you doing anything on the side? Have you picked up any side jobs of making ends meet okay, able to do the things you want to do?
I've had a couple of part-time jobs that it's just once in a while, occasional things that I've driven. The last 2 months, I've driven a dump truck for a friend, and I've delivered corneas down to the eye bank in St. Paul.
Well, that's wide-ranging.
Yeah, Lion's Gift of Sight. So that's been interesting in itself, too. So,
okay.
And it's just an occasional deal and nothing, you know, where I got to go in and punch a clock or anything. So that's been kind of fun.
So it sounds like it's more of a thing just to keep some hours filled as opposed to out of necessity.
Yeah.
Which is good. You don't want to get into retirement and immediately struggle to make ends meet.
Yeah, the dump truck thing, I can cross that off my wish list now, if that's a thing. I didn't
care for that much?
It was fun, and I'd do it again. It was for a friend at church, and he owns an excavating company, and it's very interesting driving something that's loaded down 60,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you go through four gears getting through an intersection because you're so heavy.
Yeah,
you know, it's just interesting. And so, and then the cornea delivery job is kind of interesting too, because it's people that die and donate their corneas, they get taken out by some techs, and then they need people to drive them to their to their destination to be put in. And so they need, it's a time sensitive deal, so it's pretty interesting. It's just, you get about 2 hours warning, hey, you got to go, and then you just go. And it's just, you feel like you've done something good for somebody that, you know, might get eyesight back.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, talk about time sensitive. Those things can't sit in a box for 2.5 days, I'm guessing. It's, yeah, this is available now. It's got to get here, and no time to waste, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the retirement... I think our generation and those that will follow are going to experience a different kind of retirement than, say, my dad did. My dad's been retired over 30 years after serving 36 years in the military, you know, doing pretty dang well for 86. But I don't know if many of us are going to be retired 30-plus years and spending 10 of those in Florida and then 20 of them back here and raising grandkids and playing golf and doing all this. You know, I think retirement's going to look different, you know, especially for me, compared to what it did for, you know, the generations before. And I'm not sure that's all for the better, but I guess it's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, 86 is, my dad lived to 88, and he got out golfing and eventually he couldn't do that as much either and couldn't bowl. And he went to pool and he got with his buddies and mm-hmm. went to go play pool. And it was just something they did to get together on weekdays.
That's really good. Enjoyed. Well, and, you know, we all spend so much time doing whatever it is we end up doing for a living that we should have that payoff. That payoff should be out there for all of us. That after you put in your 30 or 40 years of hard work that, you know, you can live out the rest of those years, God willing, however many of them you have, doing things that make you happy, doing the things you didn't have the time for all those years when you got to get up early, you got to get to the time clock by 7, and we come from the same industry. Our work days aren't 9 to 5. They just kind of last however long they last, and doesn't leave much time for anything else on an average work day. So now your fitness that I've already kind of touched on here, you've always managed to stay in amazing shape. Now, I'm not holding you to an expert level advice here. We're not going to hold you to anything that you say works for you or any suggestions you might make. You know, like I'm going to try to get a feel for what you do because I would love to look half as good as you do when I reach 67. So is it something that it doesn't come as easy to everyone as it does to maybe some others? Is this something you've consciously worked on throughout your life, or were you one of those where it was kind of just, you know, I never really focused on it much. I've just kind of been blessed with a body that's managed to stay in good shape.
Well, part of it is that the industry that I worked in really keeps you moving. And I would have to say that the biggest downfall of people that retire is they plant it on the couch and they don't get off of it.
Right.
And being for whatever reason, you know, some are limited and some just get lazy that way. And you just got to make an effort to just get off the couch and just go for walks around the block or a bike ride. A lot of people are limited as to sore joints and all that. I suggest bike riding or swimming are the two best things you can do for your body because it's the least intrusive on your joints.
Least impact on those joints, yeah.
And so eating healthy is, and I, you know, you got to have a cheat meal once in a while and an ice cream here and there, but even with that.
I got that part down. I got the cheat days down cold.
Good. But, you know, if you go and Google anything that, you know, the leafy greens and the supplements and stuff like that, and drink water. I know you had mentioned on your show you want 25 glasses of water a week.
One of the few that I'm actually on track for so far, as those resolutions go. I'm on track with that one.
I had read, and I had been told many times, you are to drink half of your body weight in ounces every day to stay hydrated.
So, interesting. I've never heard it laid out like that before.
Yeah, so me being 210 pounds, I should drink 105 ounces of water a day. So that's a little over 3/4 gallon.
Okay, so yeah, I just want to make sure I understand. A half your body weight in ounces.
Correct.
So in your case, 105, average glass of water is probably, what, 8 ounces?
Yeah, that's a cup. So if you're drinking a liter or a quart, you should have about 6 quarts of water.
So my goal is not even close, is what you're saying. Hey, we got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. Yeah. And, you know, if you're having a tea that has a lot of water, too, in it, you know, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Coffee is diuretic, so that really takes away from the hydration. So you drink things that have water in it. And I'm kind of excited about the possibility of new health restrictions where, take Gatorade, they always say it's hydrate, but it's so full of red dyes and green dyes and all those things that I won't ever touch it. Water, a tea. I do drink coffee. You know, I'll have a cup of coffee almost every day. But if you have the other amounts of water to go with it, you just spend more time in the bathroom. That's all.
Yeah. You know, that is one thing I've noticed. Liquid in, liquid out. I don't think it's just my age at work here. I am having to go to the bathroom a lot more than I used to. But again, that's the price you pay for proper hydration, I guess. So you mentioned watching what you eat, and Are you a calorie counter? Are there certain things that you just won't touch? Are there certain things you swear by? When you say you watch what you eat, what in your normal day-to-day do you make sure you include? And is there anything you make sure to leave out?
Well, for years and years, we always heard the good and the bad about eggs. You know, they're bad. They're high in cholesterol. They're this, they're that. And I eat probably 15 eggs a week.
So I believe it.
I eat a lot of eggs because it's good protein. And my workouts, because I am older, I stretch them into like 2 or 3 hours because I'll do a set. And it's, I get tired, you know, if there's a set of something, because I try and make it go as long as I can. And I do very low weight, but a lot of reps. And that way, in the older body, you don't pull muscles or joints or hurt yourself. So the reps are key. And again, staying hydrated and drinking water while you're doing that, because your joints are starving for water as you're working them.
Especially if you're stretching them out for 2 or 3 hours. I mean, that's a dedicated workout right there.
Yeah. And like I said, I'll do a set of, my new number recently is 1,000. So if I'm doing triceps or something, I'll do 1,000, but I'll do them in sets of 100 with a low weight.
Mm-hmm.
But so you can still feel the burn, but you're not tearing.
You're not putting that muscle at risk by overdoing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a suggestion for older people that work out, that, you know, you don't go to the squat rack and try to do 600 pounds. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, so, and what would you need to do that for?
Yeah. You know? And it, you know, muscle gain is less and less as you get older, no matter how you do it. The supplements that I take, still, you can have muscle growth up to 70, 72.
At some point, does it become more about muscle retention than
right.
it does muscle building?
Yep. Yeah. And you'll have your good and bad days. I've been working out for 40 years anyway, and you have your good and bad days. There's some days you go into the gym and you say, I just don't feel this at all.
I just ain't got it today.
And just do what you can, do something because you're there, and then just walk out. But there's days where you don't even want to work out, and you say, I got to do this. And all of a sudden, you have the best workout of, you know, for the whole month. And it's just like, wow. I'm
sure the best workouts can come from days like that, you're saying.
Yes.
Where you feel up to it the least, but
yep.
That perseverance of pushing through can almost drive you to the next level, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And there's some collagen peptides that I take, and one of them is called L-arginine, which is a branched-chain amino acid. And you can feel, when you take that, I can feel my blood actually warming up. It's bizarre, and you can... Like, if you sit in a chair, you know, a lot of times you get cold, you know, you're just sitting there not moving. And you start moving around a little bit, and you feel the blood warming up in your body as you're moving around. Well, this thing kind of helps that. And all of a sudden, you're ready to go. Your muscles are like, okay, here you go. You got blood in them. Let's go. Let's do this.
So the gym has always been part of your routine? I mean, even when you worked the physical job and things like that, is this... always been something you've done, or is this something you've more added in as maybe you retire from the physical job and into retirement, or has it always been something you've done?
Yes, probably since about age 25.
Okay, that's going back a ways.
Yeah, I had kind of little man syndrome when I was growing, because I graduated high school at 102 pounds and was
102?
And was 5'2". So... you know.
For the listening audience, he is neither one of those anymore. Neither 5'2" nor 102. He already gave us his weight, and I can attest by my own eyes. What are you, about
5'11"?
5'11"? Okay, yeah.
So yeah, massive growth at age 19, 20. And, you know, I did hit the gym quite a bit then because I didn't want to be a string bean. And like I said, having a little man syndrome, I wanted to get bigger. But... as far as the gym, that's been off and on. You know, I go to a gym, I find a gym, oh, this is cool, and then there's the pain of going there and, you know, getting all set up. So I actually do more workouts at home than I do at the gym. Of course, okay. The gym has got the machines that are, you know, state of the art. They're great. You can do things there that you can't do at home, of course. Mm-hmm. But just getting creative with, I have three sets of dumbbells, and I get very creative with the three sets of dumbbells, and I can do just about anything with those. Mm-hmm. And it's worked out pretty good that way.
Very cool. I think we've already kind of touched on this, is strength versus endurance. I mean, now, correct me if I'm wrong here. My understanding is, especially for younger people, if you're lifting weights and you're trying to push that maximum, you're looking for that maxed out muscle strength. Whereas if you do what you're saying, more of the, I'm not going to lift as much, number one, it's safer, but right. Is that more of an endurance kind of training when you're using a lower weight, but many, many more reps? Or does that have the same strength benefit that maybe, you know, trying to max out on the bench press or the squat rack is?
I've heard it both ways, and I've read it both ways, where if you do more weight, you'll build muscle bigger. But, you know, a lot of those people that you see like that are on some kind of a gas or steroid, number one.
Yeah.
And you do build up some muscle, but I found that doing the reps is a lot safer, especially at my age. And you can build muscle, too.
And that will still tone your body, right? You're absolutely not going to end up looking cartoonish like one of those WWE guys, you know. But you're going to build a physically appealing, aesthetically appealing tone to your
physique, everything up. And like I say, if it's the whole getting and moving, you know, get on a bicycle, go for a walk, do whatever. That all helps in that. You know, you burn the calories that way. And you do during a set, too. They call these things called a superset, where you kind of go from one set to another set immediately. You only give yourself 5 second rest. So you get worn out quicker. But these supersets are it's to change, because you have to shock your system sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So
keep the body guessing, as they say, right?
Yep.
Now, one thing that's always struck me about you, especially watching you play golf, is your mobility. Your swing is as loose and as limber as anyone's I've ever seen. And I'm not making that up. I'm not trying to flatter you here, even though I may be. That swing of yours is so fluid, and you reach back so far and follow through so true. To me, I mean, the strength is obviously there based off nothing more than I watch the ball disappear beyond the horizon, it feels sometimes. But that swing of yours, I think, really speaks to your mobility. Is there a certain exercise you've done throughout the years that has focused on that, or is that just a byproduct of trying to work out and keep your body healthy in general?
Well, with that, I used to caddy for my dad back when I lived in Chicago area. And being as little as I was, I always wanted to compete, because I've always been competitive, with my dad and his buddies for driving the golf ball. And, you know, they always kept telling, oh, that's the distance will come. And so I've always had this kill, kill, kill attitude at the tee box. And so I've always had like an over-exaggerated swing a little bit, and come down, and speed of the club is always what I felt was going to get the ball out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got into those long drive competitions last year. Actually went down to South Carolina for the ultimate long drive competitions. And
you've told me this story, but please share it.
And there's, you know, I had to qualify to go there. And I had one guy in my division, and I wound up beating him there, so I qualified. So I go down to Columbia, South Carolina, and there's six people in my division that qualified for this thing.
And this is a national tournament.
Yeah.
Or event.
World, whatever.
World, yeah, you know. Yeah.
The world.
not not just the United States.
Right. There was people from Japan there and Spain and stuff.
I didn't understand that. I thought it was not that there's anything to flip your nose at for a national qualifying, but this is a worldwide thing?
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of a new sport, so there's not a ton. There was 250 people total in this event. and only six in my division that made that qualified to go for it.
Okay.
Well, lo and behold, the only other guy that, you know, they take the top two guys, and it's me and the guy that I beat in the qualifier. And
oh, same guy.
Exact same guy.
So he qualified for the this competition too, but
yeah.
You had beaten him along the way?
Yep.
Okay.
So he qualified before I did, then I joined this thing, and then I qualified. So we both go down there, and he's a great, super guy. And so we're out on the practice, or the driving range, and we're practicing, and I'm crushing these balls. I'm sitting there right next to him, and I'm just crushing these things. And I could tell that he's got the feeling like, oh, I'm going to get beat today. Well, we both do our preliminaries, and him and I are the two that make it to the finals. And lo and behold, I didn't show up.
You, of all people?
You've got six golf balls and 2.5 minutes to hit them, and you have a 40 or 50-yard wide grid to hit them, to keep them in.
Okay, so there is at least a loose accuracy factor to this as well. This isn't just bomb it out there in any direction. And
right.
Okay. Yeah,
you have a grid, and it's lined with flags all the way down.
Okay.
And my first two, I popped straight up. We were hitting into a wind, and I couldn't get my tee down low enough, so the ball's going up too high. My first two up in the air. My next two to the right out of bounds. I had two left. I popped up another one that went like 240, and then my last one, I'm just going to squeeze the cheeks and let her fly, and I played it to the left side, and it went out of bounds left, so I didn't show up, and this guy hits a 290 and then beat me. So.
Oh.
But then I just played him down in the
blurted out. I can edit it.
Okay.
Everybody knows I'm from Minnesota at this point. I bitch about the Vikings every other episode. Well, we're going to get to that, too.
So, yeah, so I went down and did just hit it into the screen thing down in the cities, and I wound up beating them again. So we go back and forth, and this year when I go to South Carolina, I told them I'm weightlifting like crazy, and I'm trying to work on my speed. That's another thing with weightlifting. As you get older, you have to keep your flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have near the flexibility that I want. I do have, the only reason my swing is so crazy is because I've been doing it for 50 years. And it's just...
I wouldn't even call it crazy. It's just, it's full. I don't feel like I can reach back far enough to get that extra little push. And then, you know, I've always had a problem with my follow through. And I wouldn't describe yours as crazy. It's just, it's full and it's fluid and it is, you repeat it so well. You know, you watch it, and it's like, you're hitting it 330 or whatever it is. Looks like 330 to me. But you're not spraying it all over the place. You're not one out of nine you're going to hit the fairway, and the other six non-par threes you're looking in the woods for your ball.
I've had to work on that through the years, because I've had the banana slice for years and years, and everybody kept telling me to play your slice. And I'm like, no,
I want to fix my slice.
Right. And exactly. And it all has to do when you have a club head speed over 105 to 110.
Have you ever had yours measured? Did they measure it for you at this competition?
Yeah. And when they had the indoor mat up where I live, I'd go there on a Sunday night with my pastor, and I hit 40 balls. I drove 40 balls, and this was a few years back, and I've lost a little bit, but it was between 116 and 121 was my fastest club head speed. And that's right at, you know, I just had one at 120, but that's about where the pros are hit.
I was going to say, I have nothing to compare that to. Mine's never been measured, but that sounds really fast to me.
It's coming through, and that's part of the exaggerated swing, as they call it. And, but it's down now to probably 104 to 108. So it's a little bit, you know, the age is taking a couple miles MPH off of it. But
yeah,
I found that, and I just talked to the guys that have been in this for a long time, they have a more flexible shaft. They have, their club head speed is around the same, but they're hitting it 320 to 340, and they don't get worn out. And the shaft of my driver is extra extra stiff. So they say what happens is that you hit 20 shots with yours, you'll be tired. You won't if you have a flex shaft and you learn how to use it.
Okay.
But they're also hitting 48-inch drivers. I've only got a 45. So that makes a difference, too.
Oh, geez, there's all kinds of variables here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And their driver is, like, they have their degree of driver is as low as 3.5 degrees to about 6.5 is max.
What is the what is the typical driver? Isn't it about 6?
You buy one off the shelf, it's going to be anywhere from 9 to 10.
Oh, that high?
Yeah.
So you're basically swinging a 3.5 degrees.
Yeah.
That's like swinging a wall. I mean, there's no loft to that almost at all. By, well, 3.5 degrees of loft.
Yeah.
That's it.
But what they do is they tee their ball up higher, and they bring their driver head about 5 to 6 inches back behind the ball. So when they're coming through, their club is already on the way up.
They're on the upswing. Okay.
And then you get a lot more distance.
Gives
that
a little
way.
More. Okay.
And so adjusting to all that throughout the years has been interesting.
And
but
see,
it works.
And I could talk about these national competitions. I mean, okay, so there's this national competition for longest drive. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Were you competing in national tournaments as a dart player throughout your adult life here?
I have. I've been to
with a fair amount of success. I might wager.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different levels. There's from master level, which has people from all over the world, to level 14, where that's just kind of for beginners. But I got going into darts. I just kind of like, okay, I'm going to see how I can do with this, and I've been competitive in everything, so I kind of turned it up to. Okay, I'm going to do real well with this. And so going through the different levels, I started, I think, in level 1. It was when I went to these national tournaments. And it was really interesting because you get these people that are well-known dart players, and they just dominate the board. They don't know who you are. So when you go up there and you hit a bunch of stuff, and then they're like, okay, I'm going to try, I'm getting back into this guy's doing something. And then you wind up beating them, and then they look at you like, who are you?
Who is this guy?
And so that's happened a couple times, and it was really fun. And we've been to San Francisco and Pittsburgh and Chicago for the Bullshooter Tournament. That was a real interesting event. There was 500 people in this one event. It took 10.5 hours for this event to happen, and I wound up eventually taken 3rd out of 500 and
wow.
Got some 4-foot trophy, and I had to play in this camera and stuff. The first time I'd ever been on in whatever these two cameras, one on you and one on a dartboard, and it was kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
But you get all that out of the picture and concentrate on the board and stuff and do what you can do. And 3rd, I was pretty happy with 3rd.
Out of 500, I would say so.
So that was kind of cool, but that was probably the highlight. And now there's people that are crazy good, and I'm not even in the picture anymore. For those that throw darts, there's a marks per round average. It's kind of like a bowling average. And these guys are shooting, and it doesn't sound like much, but it is a lot, over a 4, over a 5 marks per round. And
out of a maximum of possible 9. For those that aren't dart players.
And
most average hacks like me are about a 1.5. He's talking about 3-4 times that.
Yeah, it's incredible what these guys, everything's a triple or double bowl, and they spend 8 hours in front of the dartboard, which I'm not willing to do anymore. I go and I play, and if I do my workouts at home, I'll throw 2-3 games in between workout sets and stuff, so...
Keeps the skills sharp, but I mean, we're not going to dedicate our whole lives to it, right? Like,
right.
That 8 hours a day, that sounds like work.
Yeah. And these people, they, an average sponsored dart player can make $80,000 to $100,000 a year just throwing darts and going to tournaments all over the place. And
not a terrible way to make a living.
No, it's a lot of dedication. That's for sure. And you have your hot and cold times too. Absolutely. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, like any other competitive activity, yeah, you're going to go through slumps and, you know, those days where everything just flows better and you have one of your better days, and you can follow that up with a day that's not so great. But I mean, just not many of us can walk around and say, oh, I've competed on a national level in not one, but two different activities. And as someone who will never compete nationally on anything, that's been endlessly fascinating to me to watch those journeys of yours, even from afar. Just to wrap up the fitness discussion here before we move on to faith, do you subscribe to the cheat day mentality? Is there a day of the week or a day of the month or a certain forbidden fruit that you permit yourself to, that gets you through these other maybe 6 days a week where it's nope, I'm going to stick with this, I'm going to stick with this, and then when it gets to this day or this time or this food, I'm going to do what I want? Or is that too counterproductive?
Well, like we discussed before, you got to like shock the body and with your workouts and stuff, and you got to give your body a rest too. And I've gone on vacation. I didn't do anything for 2 weeks. So you go for a walk and just try and keep your body in a little, you know, a momentum, keep it going, keep your blood flowing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you got to take a day off from working out. And usually I will do that on the weekends. During the week, I'll do 3 to 4 pretty decent workouts. And I can feel them because my muscles are fatigued at the end of the day. So I know I did something there. As far as the cheat thing, yeah, you can do that. You can, you should do that. You got to give your muscles a rest. To go for a prolonged hiatus, as they would say, it's hard to get back into it after you take a month off for whatever reason. If you injure yourself, you just can't get at it, or you're doing whatever, and you don't do it, and you're making excuses not to do it, because that's always fun. Mm-hmm. And so you start it back up, and you just like, okay, here we go. Now I got to go through the soreness again, you know. And so,
well, yeah. And the gains can be lost a lot faster than they are acquired, right? It doesn't take long of a hiatus to give up months of progress.
Correct. Right? But if you've had a regiment of working out for a long time, there's muscle memory. So okay. You may not have worked out, and all of a sudden, you know, say a year goes by, something happens in life and you're not working out, and you've been working out your whole life, your body knows what's going on. Like, oh, we're getting back into the workout thing.
I remember this.
And so you do. You have soreness, and it seems like after 2 workouts, you're like, I want to give this up. This isn't like it used to be. Well, you got to get through that. And sometimes it takes a month. And I know I don't work my legs as much as I should at all. And if I ever get back in there, I mean, working your legs is almost twice as hard as the upper body because they're bigger muscles. So you feel it more. You do a leg workout, it takes 2 days for it to really kick you, and then you're like, oh my God, I can't even walk anymore.
Yeah.
But that goes away too, and then you feel the strength coming back in your legs and stuff. So,
but you do allow yourself the grace to say, you know what, I know I shouldn't have this piece of cake or this donut right now, but I've been good for 14 straight days. I'm going to allow myself a little grace here and have something fun. And that can, and maybe that can kind of keep you going, you know.
Well, it's,
give you that carrot to chase at the end of the week or the month or whatever.
It's odd that you say that, because on the way here, I had a fat pill from the Quick Trip.
A fat pill. I'm going to steal that. Totally stealing that.
And then I enjoyed every bite of that donut.
Well, but you know you earned it. You earn it with this dedication, you know, especially, you know, 67 years old, God bless you. You've been doing that a long time, and good for you. And that gives people like me hope that you can ingest the occasional fat pill.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't completely undo all the good you've done to that point, maybe just a tiny little bit. But
yeah, with that, part of the thing that I look for now, like, you know, we talked about ice cream before, and I'll look at the ingredients in ice cream, you know. There's so many things that are not good for your body, like palm oil and canola oil is really garbage for your system.
I've heard some really bad things about these seed oils that we're learning more about, and some of which have been maybe not necessarily oils, but a lot of these additives and colors have been banned in some other civilized countries.
Almost every country except for the U.S.
Except for the U.S., and we wonder why we're looking around, and we have this, you know, this 40-plus percent obesity rate, whereas Japan is 6 or whatever it is. I don't remember the exact number, but I looked that up, and we don't compare very favorably to almost any other civilization, especially. But that's we will get into that another day, because I think we will talk RFK Jr. and that kind of stuff.
I can't wait for that one.
These hearings are heating up. I think Pete Hegseth is sitting down as we speak for his grilling. So yeah, Pete Hegseth going through that as we speak, and there's really no reason these people shouldn't get confirmed. It's who the president wants. He won the popular vote. You know, I'm really anxious to see what RFK can do, because he's got some other beliefs that maybe I don't completely align with, but when it comes to our food supply and, you know, really bringing to light some of this stuff that we are putting in our systems daily that other countries don't just frown upon, literally do not allow in their food supply, there is so much to explore there, and we will certainly do that another day. I don't want to keep you here all day. I want to talk about faith, because I've said several times on this show that I need to be more purposeful about my religion. I have a priest that I really like, but I know the Catholic Church themselves would say it's not about the priest, it's about the faith. Don't get attached to the person. You should be coming to church because of the religion, because of Jesus, because of God, not because you like the priest. Okay, I get that. So I need to be more purposeful about religion in my life. I set a embarrassingly manageable goal of 25 times a year to get to my church, which is, like I say, every other week. That's not good enough, but faith, I know for a fact, has always been a very big part of SS's life here, and we don't need to get into them right now, but I want to give the listeners a little bit of a brief, vague background that you've had some very trying things happen throughout your life, going, I mean, it's really all the way back, and you know, we could maybe save that discussion for another day. We don't have to get into it, but part of my admiration of you is how that faith, at least from what I've seen, has never wavered, even when it had every reason to. And I want to talk about your faith journey. Your upbringing was certainly unique. You can touch on whatever aspects of that you'd like, but talk about your introduction to faith. First of all, are you of any denomination?
Well, I grew up in several foster homes throughout my childhood, and one of them was a Lutheran faith-based family. And so I went to a Lutheran parochial school, and that's where I really learned about God and what he was about. And I was confirmed in a Lutheran church as well, and I kind of got away from I am currently non-denominational, because I found that when you have denominations involved, there's a lot of different rules and procedures that they do within the church that really draw you away from God. And I want it to be about God and a relationship. To me, you know, it's not about religion, it's about a relationship. And Christianity being your relationship with Jesus Christ and knowing that he died on the cross for your sins, and there's only one way to get to heaven, and that's through Christ. And so when you have all of the different things that kind of deter you, not deter, but
impede,
distract from what God is about, I kind of turn away from that and just recluse back into that there's Jesus Christ and there's God and there's heaven and there's hell and they're real. And I explained to my son that throughout life you'll have questions and there's things you don't understand, and you bring it up to God and you say, you know, why is this happening? I went through a horrific divorce years ago, and I've always been true to my family and did my best I could for my family, and I looked up at God and said, why is this happening? I adopted a son that I felt God pushing me to become this kid's father, because God had taken care of me and put me in different good foster homes, and that this kid wasn't really going to have a father. And so I felt God pushing me to be his father. And I was kind of apprehensive. And the second time I felt this push, I said, okay, I'm all in. And so I did it. And years later, everything fell apart. As quick as it could, it just fell apart. And my kids were turned against me. And I'm just like, and I actually got the closest to God that I've ever been when I was going through that, because I felt like, what else is left? There's, you know, I'm doing what I can. I'm trying to live a life to make you happy, God. What's going on? And at the same time, I felt like that maybe he was going to push me in a different direction at that point. And lo and behold, all my kids came back to me. They all love me and give me hugs, tell me they love me all the time, and we have a good relationship now. And life is a lot better than it was 4 or 5 years ago. It just proves to me that God is watching out for me. Through my whole life, he's watched out for me. And there's a little meme that I see every once in a while. It's a person that has had something done for them that was good. Something turned out good. And they point to heaven and they say, I know that was you. And that's exactly what it is.
I mean, it is a fascinating story. And you, you actually just touched on what my next question was going to be. I wasn't going to pry on the personal level about the divorce you went through. I saw it from, afar as a friend of yours watching you go through this, and just how it drew on and drew on. And every story you told me about what was happening and involving this whole mess was just, it was more unbelievable than the last. I know you've been a faithful, you just said, going all the way back to your childhood, brought up in a strong Lutheran home. It sounds to me like religion's been a strong part of your life throughout. Did you ever have a crisis of faith throughout, specifically that most challenging time you just talked about?
Actually, I don't think so. I don't, if I did, I can't remember, but it's always been when I try and get through life by myself and realize that I can't do this, and you lean more into God, things start turning around, and you know, you have your sometimes one step forward and two back, you know, but eventually you start walking forward again. And it's just, if you don't have that gets you through. I had a lot of really good friends as well. And I believe that God put these people in my life to help me get through the atrocities I was going through. But it was, looking back on it now, I know that he was allowing things to happen to me to get me to go closer towards him. And so I'm thankful for my family, back, my kids, and just, you know, you have something to look forward to. If you have a faith in God and you know what the future holds, you walk through life differently because you know there's something beyond this. So.
I completely agree with that. That it, even as not a as religious a person as I'd like to be, as I aspire to be, that I'm going to try to become, I can't imagine going through life thinking, this is it. We're just these amoebic creatures that came out of the ocean 4 billion years ago, and through evolution, we've become what we are, and we're just on this rock floating around this endless cavernous of space, and there's absolutely there's no higher purpose to it. There's no higher meaning. There's no higher power out there. I like, and I've mentioned this on this show a couple times now, that I think people need to have some kind of feeling in their life that they're aspiring to something bigger than themselves. I think what we're seeing in a lot of society now is a lot of people thinking they're it. That there is no higher power. The only purpose for you on this rock is to generate as much self-fulfillment as you can. Doesn't matter who you step on, doesn't matter how you treat people, doesn't matter how many bridges you've burned, it's all about attaining whatever you want to attain for yourself, and you'll last however long you're going to last here, and then it's lights out, and that's it. That sounds to me like a pretty pretty empty way to live.
Dismal end.
Well, yeah. I mean, what are you doing any of this for then?
I had a conversation with one of my brothers one time, and he went from singing in the choir to a born-again atheist. And I had this discussion with him, and I'm like, okay, do you believe that a body, well, take the human eye. They say the human eye is 10,000 times more complicated than the most complicated computer for what the human eye does. And you, I said, do you believe that that just evolved from a puddle of ooze? I said, you look at it, and it's just, I don't care if you give it 100 billion years. It's just not going to happen to do what it can do. There's a preacher I listened to years ago that he did a thing on evolution versus creation, and he was proving creation. And there's people that'll disagree with this, but, you know, the Bible says the earth is 6,000 years old. And so you have these scientists that go, oh, millions of years ago and all of this stuff. And so this guy breaks it down as to, you know, because you have all this carbon dating and all this stuff. Well, he said in, I think it was Iceland or Greenland, there was a core sample taken out of the ice that was however many feet long, say 100 feet long. And the one scientist that believed in evolution was saying, well, look at this. Here's a year, here's a year, here's a year. You know, they kept going down this ice, and they were talking about how many years old the earth was. And what this other, the creation scientist said was, yeah, at the bottom of that ice core sample was a World War II airplane. So this other guy had said, well, look at all these years, and at the bottom of that was this airplane. And the guy said that it doesn't represent a year. Each one of those different colorations in the ice core was a thawing and a freezing, thawing and a freezing, thawing and a freezing.
Which can happen multiple times.
Correct.
A year.
So
a month, a week even.
Right. So it kind of debunked that guy's showing of how there were so many years. And so, I personally, I believe the Bible. I don't know how to prove that the world is only 6,000 years old. You know, 4,000 BC and 2,000 AD. Mm-hmm. But as I told my son, there's a lot of things that you will not understand. And because of our simpler mind, we just can't comprehend. We don't understand eternity. Because when you die, they say it's eternity. Okay, you'll be there for eternity. But just as much as eternity, there was the before that was eternity that people can't concept either. I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the middle of that was the earth and the creation of the earth. And then afterwards will be eternity as well. And after reading the book of Revelation, I read where the book of knowledge will be open to us when we reach heaven. So all these questions that we have that we don't get answers to will be answered when we get there.
Revelations is one of the few books of the Bible I have read more than once through, and it is... I don't want to get... I'm not going to get preachy. I don't want to...
Very hard to understand.
It is hard to understand, but the parts of it I do understand, there are parallels. There are undeniable parallels between what you read about in Revelations and what is happening right out in front of us in the world today. That's a subject for another day.
Yes.
we'll do an episode where we'll do a show on Revelations and you know, the end of the world as we know it. But to wrap up here, you said you're non-denominational at this point.
Correct.
Do you attend a church? Is there a regular service you go to? How do you... You obviously have made God a big part of your day-to-day life. Is there anything you do specifically to practice it, or is just he's just that big of a part of your life, and that's what your faith is founded on?
Well, I always have the, you know, as you do, the feeling like I should get more into it. And, you know, show my faith more, honor God. Non-denominational is, I go to a community church locally, which is non, it came from, it's an offspring of the Baptist church. And at the same time, my girlfriend is Catholic, so I've gone to her. So, I mean, I get two totally different services there.
Sure.
But when I go there, I bring it to God and, you know, and just know that I'm in God's house and spend time with Him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we Catholics, we like our, we've got a very regimented way that, that we do things.
The old stand up, sit down, kneel. And
all of it. Yep. Yep. All the prayers at the specific times. And it's interesting you mention having your own questions about this, because I've talked many times on this show about my admiration and my inspiration from Megyn Kelly. She's talked about her own. She even calls it a crisis of faith of her own, where she has been Catholic. She goes to church every weekend. They make it a big part of their lives. But even she has a bit of an issue with this. What's this human factor that seems to be between me and God? She's talked about trying to have her first marriage annulled. You know, she's currently married to her second husband, and she wants this recognized in the eyes of the church, and she's running into some resistance. And it has created a bit of a crisis of faith for her, and she's talked about this, that why do I have to clear this human hurdle? Like, okay, that happened. It wasn't the right fit for either one of us. They split amicably. They still are, from what I understand, pretty good friends to this day. So it's still a healthy relationship for the two of them. They've just gone on to healthier marital relationships in their own lives. And she's bothered, and I think understandably so. This might be something I'd even ask my priest about. Why do I have to clear this human hurdle? If the ultimate purpose is for me to have this unbreakable relationship with God, why do I keep having to clear these human obstacles to get to it? Like, I cleared my obstacle. I had a relationship that wasn't what it could have been or should have been. We agreed. It didn't sin per se. You know, there wasn't infidelity involved, to my knowledge. They just said this is not going to work long term for us. They both moved on to happier relationships. She's got three kids now. Like I said, they go to church every weekend. They're a big part of their church community, and she's bothered by that human factor getting in the way. So I think you might have a similar opinion of, I don't need that. I'm me and God, we're good. I don't need this third party or this intermediary that is somehow going to grease the wheels for this relationship for me. Can you speak on that at all?
Well, it's kind of like, the Catholic religion has confession.
So, I have partaken.
Okay, so yep. You go, but the Bible explicitly says you are to confess your sins to God. So why do you need the middleman? In my mind, I confess to God and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to try and waver from this and be a better Christian. And so I've actually, my neighbor, who I play cribbage with and do stuff, he's a Catholic deacon. So he has talked to my girlfriend and I, and he said that, well, you know, I could get your marriage annulled to her if we ever wanted to get married. And she said, no, because if you do that, all your kids are illegitimate because you were never married. It shows you were never married.
So an annulment, for those that don't know, an annulment is basically...
It never happened.
It never happened.
Right.
So if you had children from a marriage that is then annulled, in the eyes of the church, those children were had out of wedlock.
They're no longer, Okay. So, and she would never do that. So there's a problem within that.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can glorify God with getting married again and following the rules of certain said denominations is a really tough one.
Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating discussion that I think we could spend a whole nother hour on easily. But I've kept you here long enough. I just want to wrap this up by saying your perseverance through all of these things has always been an inspiration to me, whether I've communicated that to you or not. I've seen people that have gone through a lot less adversity than you have, and it has, in some cases partially, in some cases entirely, destroyed them. And your resistance to that I think you leaned on that faith of yours to help get you through that has always been inspiring to me. There's so much more I could talk to you about, but I've kept you here long enough. Please come back sometime soon, and we will continue this conversation.
And even as much as I've been through, it's nothing compared to what so many kids and people go through, and I just pray for them that they can find solace in the Lord and know that He's there for them.
I am a firm believer in the power of prayer. To be continued. SS, thank you so much for coming on. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
What a fascinating guy, huh? What a great conversation. He's got such an amazing story. So much to ponder there. He's come from such a unique series of circumstances. I mean, not just from his childhood, but all the way through his adult life and just things that happened that, you know, everybody's got a unique story, but just to sit and think about the very unique things that have happened to this man and his upbringing, his working career, his family, his relationships, and then that absolutely, I mean, I'm telling you, I know divorce is a far too common thing these days. What he went through is, I'm familiar with a lot of divorces. This was the most horrific and drawn out, and I mean, they're all painful, but unnecessarily and purposefully painful divorce I've ever had the misfortune of witnessing, you know, happening to somebody that I admire and that I consider a good friend and that I care about. What he went through would be trying for anybody, and he has persevered through that, and you can tell he's leaned heavily on his faith, and I would argue that it even strengthened his faith, having gone through that and now come out okay on the other end with everything working out great with the kids. And some interesting things to ponder there, you know, his thoughts on creation, you know, the age of the earth. You know, there's some interesting stuff to chew on there. You don't have to agree with everything that either one of us said, but that's what we want to do here. I want to have conversations with normal, everyday people. That's what we are. That's what he is. That's what I am. And share these unique experiences and what drives people to believe what they believe. Not just religiously, but in any aspect of life. Like I say, you don't have to agree with everything I say. I don't want you to. I want to hear voices from intelligent people that disagree with me. So some of the most inspiring people in my life are people that have made me think of things in a way that I might not have had I not met them. Just a very cool story. I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to be doing a lot more of that kind of thing going forward here, and I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think about it. I've got at least three more of these kind of sit-downs planned, hopefully a couple of them happening very, very soon here. Thank you for spending this time with us. Again, we're going to do more of these in the very near future. I hope you enjoy it. We're going to wrap here. Again, this has been Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. That was SS. Don't be a jerk. Cilantro tastes like soap. And I'll talk to you next time.